Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Be future ready with a pension powered by Zurich's award-winning investment performance.
Going to the doctor today might seem daunting, but it's a walk in the park compared to such visits in years gone by. Fergal Keane's been to an exhibition of antique surgical instruments and innovations hosted by the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland. And in case you'd like to see the gruesome instruments, we've tweeted a short video of the highlights from at Drive Time RTE. Fergal sent us this report.
I'm Ronan Kelly and I work in the library here in RCSI.
Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland, you have a special exhibition today.
That's right. Because the college has been on the same spot, doing more or less the same thing for the past 235 years, we have collected an extraordinary array of medical instruments, as long as many other things in our archive. And what we thought we would do is tell the stories of some of these instruments, and particularly ones associated with figures from the college.
We're going to go along and look at some of these. They look like precision instruments, but antiques.
This is a cataract set from the late 18th, early 19th century for removing cataracts. And it's particularly important to us here in RCSI because it's associated with Sylvester O'Halloran. And in the era that we're talking about, say before the college was founded, surgery and medicine were two very distinct disciplines, and surgery was very much the poor relation. Medics had titles, they studied in university, they operated outside the body. Surgeons were tradespeople. They carried tools, bloody knives, there was blood everywhere they went. But O'Halloran went to the continent and he saw what they were doing there. They were making surgery respectable. And he came back to Ireland and he said, we need to do several things. We need to create a list of competent surgeons, because your surgeons were by no means competent at the time. We need a list of professors and we need a premises in which to train people. So that's where we're standing today, in that premises.
The iconic building of number 123 St. Stephen's Green.
That's right, that's right.
Let's look at this here. Sure. It looks a particularly cruel instrument.
For people on the radio, it looks very like a corkscrew because it operates very like a corkscrew. It's a trepanning set for making a hole in the head, a small hole in the cranium. If there was a bleed on the brain, a hematoma, and pressure needed to be relieved, you needed to make that hole. Now, interestingly, neurosurgeons today still have to make a hole, but generally speaking, if they take out a disc of bone, they'll pop it back when they're done.
This is like a circular saw. Did people have anesthetics for this?
This one here will date from the early 19th century. And one of the people who was very interested in using trepanning kits was Samuel Croker King, who was the first president of the college. This and almost everything at the table here predates anesthesia. So what would happen is, and Croker actually wrote about this, it was kind of annoying for the patient, but very annoying for the doctor operating it too. But he would take a swig of brandy, the patient would take a swig of brandy, and off they would go.
Okay. Another cruel-looking piece here.
Yeah, I mean, this is quite a space-age-looking piece of equipment. This is an early hypodermic syringe. The hypodermic syringe was invented by an Irishman, Francis Rind. It operated on a gravity principle as opposed to having a plunger at the time. So he invented this, but he didn't actually tell very many people about it. He didn't share his findings, and that's always very, very important in the dissemination of knowledge, particularly around medicine. And it was only maybe some 20 years later, when others were using very similar equipment, suspiciously similar equipment, that he actually wrote up his findings in a journal. And I have the journal here with me. He left it so late that his obituary actually appears in the same issue of the journal.
It's made completely of metal. What in those days would you be injecting somebody with?
He would have used morphine. So it was early experiments with anesthesia. The great revolutions in surgery are anesthesia and then the discovery of antiseptics. But so a lot of these instruments that you see here are in plush velvet cases, all very attractive, but that's a terrible place to store medical instruments because it's a perfect incubator for infectious disease. They didn't know that at the time, and actually as they moved from patient to patient, they were spreading disease.
So if we look at this, it's a group of saws and knives in a velvet box.
In a velvet box. This is a surgeon's kit from the Crimean War. And essentially, it is about blades, nothing much more than blades. So even at this stage, they would know things about anesthesia. They didn't have time for that on the field of battle. Okay. Battle and warfare actually speeds along. It's one of the sad truths of it, but it actually helps medicine develop.
Another piece of equipment here looks like a bulb to push air through something.
Yeah, not far off. This is an early blood transfusion kit. The first blood transfusion was performed in Ireland in 1865 by a president of the college, Robert MacDonald. A 14-year-old girl called Mary Ann Dooley had suffered an accident working in a paper mill. And so he actually transfused blood from his arm into her to see what would happen. And she gained some relief, but actually, sadly, she died within 24 hours. Later experiments were more successful. So when we're talking about the history of medicine, we do talk about trial and error, trial and error.
They didn't know anything about blood groups.
They didn't know about blood groups. That came later, yeah. One of the other interesting things about this is that three of Bram Stoker's brothers were doctors. And it seems likely that Stoker learned a little bit about blood transfusion from MacDonald's experiments. And, of course, he went off to write the great novel of blood transfusion, Dracula.
Now, Ronald, some of the names in medicine, over-the-counter medicines that we are familiar with today, have their basis in medical history, the kind of thing you're exploring here.
From this era, exactly that. I mean, the figure who creates the great revolution in antiseptic medicine is Joseph Lister. But he had a hard time getting people to actually believe that there were tiny infectious microbes running around. People thought that was crazy. But he used microscopes and he looked closely at what was happening to various pieces of tissue. And to promote his ideas and to let people know and to save lives, he would go on lecture tours. He went to London, he went to the continent, and he went to New York and Philadelphia. And actually in Philadelphia, one of the people in the audience there thought, well, this could be a very interesting product for me to sell. And he gave it the snappy title of Listerine.
And we're still using it today?
We're still using it
Johnson today. Johnson & Johnson also has a story?
One of the Johnsons was there that day too, listening to Joseph Lister give his talk. So much of what we touch and use and think about today actually has its origins in the era we're talking about.
Is your exhibition here open to the public?
This is only just a temporary one now at the moment, but we have made it as widely available as possible by putting the booklet, which we've put together, online. So it's available at digitalheritagecollections.rcsi.ie, and it's called Instruments and Innovations.
That was Fergal Keane reporting, and we have tweeted a video of Fergal's video from at Drive Time RTE.